Again, good morning, everyone, and good morning to those who are on live stream. And no, my sermon is not about answering phone calls. So Gary's right about that. Good call. But I want to talk to you today, about our calling. And I'm going to tell a little bit about myself first, so to help illustrate the point, hopefully. I'm thinking about this last year that I've had, and as far as my career goes, it's been a very, very good year, and I do thank God for that. I think that He's blessed me in those efforts there. And I always like this picture of myself because it's I'm happy, and I think I look good, and my chest looks big, my forearms look big, my shoulders look big. You can't see my love handles, and so I think this is a good picture of me. I really like it. I'm on the range there, and I'm happy because one of my friends there, who I work with, fellow instructor and officer, we're digging through this vehicle that we have out in the range there, and we happen to find this book, and it says, God's gift for men, and he thought it was funny that I was holding it, so he snapped a photo of me. But I enjoy what I do, and I've been very successful in my efforts there. And again, I thank God for his blessings in that part of my life. But I was thinking, because it's been a good year, the reason I was thinking that is I was going through my schedule the other day, and I could just see all my calendar and my email and everything, and I have all these things going on, and I'm very, very busy at work. And when I looked at my schedule, I realized, I have all these schools and trainings going on. And I was looking at them, and there's three of them that where I was specifically requested to do these things, and not by my agency, but by outside agencies. And so, that's not something that happens very often. I work for a very small police department. It's 126 officers, something like that. And all the agencies around us are all bigger. Everyone's got more bodies. Everyone's got more resources. Everybody's got more instructors. They all have more than what we've got. And yet, they asked me, hey, can you come? Can you help us out? Can you teach? We like the way you teach. We want to have you come and do this and assist our agency. And I really realized, I've kind of reached this sort of a zenith in my career where, I never would have thought that I would have had different agencies come to me and say, hey, we want your help. We want you to come and help us, and it's kind of, again, like I give praise and thanks to God for that because I think he has absolutely and utterly blessed me in those efforts. And I've seen the fruits of that, and other people are coming and saying, hey, we want you to come help us in our agency. And so, how do you get there? How do you get to be, successful? How do you get to end up where, you're relied upon, you're asked upon, and respected enough to come? I'm going to transition kind of over now from me over to our, the point of my sermon, and we're going to talk about, the spiritual success and the spiritual needs and the spiritual things that we do in this life that God has called us to do. How do we get there? Well, let's look at people who've done it. One of my absolute ultimate favorite stories is in the Book of Mormon, and it's about Ammon. And Ammon was one of the sons of Mosiah. And he has this amazing story that I love reading it every time I go to it. I appreciate it. And, he didn't start off, this amazing person, but he started off as actually he was working against the church. And he was him and the sons of Mosiah. He was one of them, and Alma the second. They were going about and they were trying to actively destroy the church. And it was kind of amazing, when you look at that, like the church at that time, Alma the elder, the first, he brought everyone out, and they had suffered this great persecution, and they'd witnessed these miracles and these blessings that they had all partaken of. And you would think that, Alma and the sons of Mosiah would have seen all that and been like, hey, there's something to this. But they took a different course. And maybe they weren't there for it. Maybe they were young. I don't know. Maybe they didn't remember. But they went about to destroy the church. And as they were going about to do this, they had this experience. And they were visited by God or by Christ or by an angel or by a heavenly being. And they told them, you need to stop what you're doing. You need to change what you're doing. No one is going to tear apart my church. I won't allow it. Now, the only way my church is going to be torn apart is if my people stop serving me. And he tells them, you are not going to be those people. You're not going to destroy my church. This miraculous, you know, pivotal, life-changing moment. You know, and Alma, the second, he passes out or gets into a coma of some kind, and they drag him over to his father, and he comes out of it and realizes, you know, I was doing wrong. And, you know, they changes their life, the course of their life. So they have this commission, this call. And so they go out. And you can read in Alma in the 12th chapter, and they've gone out to preach to the Lamanites. And they kind of split up and they go their separate ways. And Ammon, he goes and he finds King Lamoni. And he tells him, like, hey, I'm here. I'm here to serve you. I'm going to live here for a while, maybe even the rest of my life. I just want to serve. That's all I want to do. So the king says, all right, sounds good. And he offers him his daughter and says, hey, you can come in and you can be a part of my royal family. And Ammon says, no, that's not why I'm here. I just want to be your servant. I don't want to come and partake in your gifts and blessings just yet. I have a different calling. And so he chooses to be a servant. So the king says, okay, you can go be my servant. And so he puts him in charge, puts him out with the shepherds and the guys that are keeping the animals, which I wouldn't imagine would be a very glorious job. You know, turning down the palace for going out and shoveling what animals leave behind and feeding animals and taking them out to water, you know. But Ammon knew he had a different purpose. He could have just accepted that, you know, and then that probably might have been the end of the story. Well, he went but that's not what God had for him. That's not what his calling was. And Ammon knew that. And so he goes out and he cares for these flocks. He cares for the herds. And during the course of this, you know, a couple days in, they have to go bring these animals out to this watering hole to get them watered. And all these bandits come. And in the past, when this has happened, is the bandits, they go and they scatter all these sheep. And imagine what they're doing is they're trying to enlarge in their own herds. And so they scatter these sheep and they scatter the animals. And then in the confusion, they're probably able to take away some of these animals for themselves. You know, so they're stealing from the king. And the king is upset by this when it's happened previously. And all the servants that didn't bring back his sheep, they were all executed. So Ammon is out there with these fellow servants. And these men come and they all begin to murmur. Oh no, the king is going to kill us. He's going to execute us. And sure enough, they scatter the flocks. And Ammon says, you know what? Hold on. Just go gather them back. And you're going to surround them. And then I'm going to go and I'm going to deal with these guys. So they do as he says. And they go and they gather all the animals back. And they surround them so they can't be shooed away like they were, scared off. So then he goes to and says he contends with them. And he ends up going and fighting with them. So he knows, you know, hey, death is on the line here. If I don't save this flock, you know, the king is going to execute myself and all these other men. So he knows. He's got to fight for this. And so he goes and he fights. And he fights this amazing one-man battle where he starts slinging stones at him and he kills six of them. You know, and they're astonished at his strength. They're thought, like, hey, there's so many of us. What's one guy going to do? And he ends up killing six of them. And so then they're like, all right, well, let's rush this guy. So they go rush him. He ends up chopping off all their arms. Everyone that went against him. And all these servants are watching this in amazement. And the herd and the flocks are saved. And they go back and they tell the king and they show all the arms and that he cut off. And they're amazed. You know, what does he do with that? Well, he begins to enter into his purpose, you know. He then goes in, and the king is so astonished, he doesn't know what to say to him, and Alma begins to preach to him and teach to him and tells him about the gospel and tells him about salvation, tells him about Christ, and he listens to him. And again, the king ends up being overcome with, you know, this joy, this realization, and he passes out or goes into a coma of some kind. And his wife is there, and she's concerned, and they're like, hey, they're going to bury him, but I don't think he's dead. So Alma or Ammon comes in and says, no, he's not dead. And he comes to, and then, you know, he has this revelation. He tells everybody, you know, about his salvation that he's realized. And then they all pass out again. It's kind of a funny story. Everybody keeps passing out over and over again. But now he's vulnerable. And then one of their servants goes and they tell everybody, hey, look what's happening. And all these other people come and they look and they see them all passed out. And one of them, who is happened to be related to some of those guys that he killed, is like, ah, this is my moment. So he draws his sword and he goes to slay Ammon. And he's struck dead. Now he survives this assassination attempt. Stricken down, you know, God's protecting him and working with him and showing him where to go, what to do, watching over him in his efforts. So then, they convert that part of the kingdom there. It says King Lamont's father. It's actually King Lamoni. So, but they find King Lamoni's father. It doesn't give his name, just says his father. So he's like, there's a king, and then there's the head king, and the head king is the father. And the head king had called everybody. He said, hey, you need to go and prepare yourselves, and I'm calling you all to this feast, and you're going to come, and we're going to honor me and honor my house, and you're all going to show, you know, obeisance to me and at this festival and this feast. And he told everyone to come. Well, King Lamoni didn't come. He was busy because Ammon received word, you know, received an understanding from God, like, hey, your brothers are in prison. You got to go to them. And King Lamoni is like, all right, I'm going with you. So he scoops him up, and they take him, and they go off to take his brothers out of prison. And they meet King Lamoni's father, and King Lamoni's father is upset that he hasn't come. He's upset that this Nephite has, you know, poisoned his son's mind, and he's making him do things he's not supposed to do, and going against his father. And he orders him, hey, you're going to kill him. Orders Lamoni, you're going to kill Ammon. And Lamoni says, like, I can't do it. So he gets angry, and he goes to fight him. And Ammon, you know, he fends off the king. And he gives him a wound, but he doesn't kill him. Wounds him so that he can't fight anymore. And then tells King Lamoni's father, you know, hey, I don't want to destroy you. I just want to free my brothers. I just want to come and I want to preach this gospel. That's what I want to do. I'm not here to harm you. I'm not here to kill you. And so he allows him this freedom to go throughout his land and preach. And he goes and he sets his brothers free. And they're taken out of prison. And they're able to go through and they're able to go to their synagogues and talk to their people. And they convert thousands. And you know, they lay down their weapons and they make this covenant. You know, I'm not going to go back to that life. Never going back. You know, this is an amazing story of this huge accomplishment, this success. It's a wonderful story of Ammon and his plight and his success in the gospel and converting and witnessing miracles, seeing the hand of God come in and work. You know, because he answered this call that he had. Now, he's certainly not the only one. There's many. I've got another example. You know, David was another one. We look at him. And God called him early. He was anointed as to be king as a boy. Now, if you look at that scripture and the prophet comes out, Samuel, and he's told, like, hey, you know, Saul, I've left Saul. You need to go anoint a new king. And he's in this house. So you need to go there. You need to call that house, the father of David. And you're going to anoint the one I tell you. So Samuel goes. He calls in the family there, David's family. And he says, all right, I need to see your sons. And so he says, all right, here's my first son, my firstborn. And Samuel looks at him. He's like, no, that's a king right there. This guy's got it. You know, he's strong. He looks the part. And the Lord tells him, like, nope, that's not the one. And he goes through one by one all of his sons that he has there. And each time God tells him, nope, that's not the one. And Samuel's like, you know, how could this not be? None of these are the, how is that, Lord? I mean, they all look strong and they're able-bodied and capable. And God tells me, you know, I look for something else. I'm looking on the exterior. And so then they finally bring in, and Samuel asks the father, he says, do you have any other sons at all? Anyone? He says, I got one more. He's the shepherd. So he brings him in, and he looks at him, and he describes a boy as a dirty little boy. And God says, he's the one. He takes that oil and he anoints him right there. He's anointed as king. You know, this amazing beginning, you know, from small things, but yet he's anointed as a king. And what does he do? He goes, there's a war, the Midianites come, and they are expected, or they are looking at this battle. Or excuse me, not the Midianites, the Philistines. And the Philistines come, and they bring their champion out, and their champion has gone out. For 40 days, he challenges them. He says, come. Come out. One of you, come out. He challenges them all to this, what they call single combat, you know, one-on-one. And Israel is scared, and Saul is scared. Everyone's scared. They look at this guy. He's a giant. And what does David do? David comes out. His father tells him, go take food to your brothers. Take food to the captain. So he goes and he sees this and he looks and realizes, you know, I'm called to serve Israel. And he answers his call. He fights Goliath and he wins. You know, this earns him this place in Saul's court. And Saul takes him and says, hey, you're going to be in my house now and you're going to live here. And he makes a friend with Jonathan and he marries one of Saul's daughters. You know, he's got this place. Everything's going swimmingly at first. You know, and he continues to do what he's supposed to do. He goes out, Saul sends him out, and he fights the Philistines. And he wins, and they flee from him. You know, and that's really David's story. He's this warrior king. He fights for Israel against overwhelming odds. And time again, he wins. And he beats back the Philistines, the enemies of Israel, because he answered the call. And he's even delivered from Saul. Saul becomes very envious of him, hates him, tries to kill him multiple occasions, and he's delivered over and over and over because he answered the call. So we can look at these examples, these people who have gone, and they've answered the call. They've gone and done great things. Miraculous things, wonderful things for the salvation of their people and salvation of those who are lost. And you can look at that and say, you know, I'm not them. I don't have armies to lead. I don't have giants to slay. I don't have, you know, these grand things. I'm not the member of a king's court. No, that's not what I am. It's not where I'm from. I'm just, you know, this little person. I don't have much influence. You know, there's an important thing that I heard the other day, and it's this. You know, it's comparing kills accomplishment. You know, if we're always, and it's had to do with social media, and you're always looking at other people's lives and looking at all these other fun things that they're doing. You look at pictures, and they're all happy, and they're off in exotic locations and eating exotic foods and doing fun things. And you look at that, and like, pictures of families, and they're all happy and smiling. And, you know, and you look at your own life, and like, you know, I don't have that. You know, and it kills your accomplishment. And so we can't compare ourselves necessarily to the great deeds of others, the perceptions that we have, you know, because it's going to kill your accomplishment. And the fact of the matter is that God created you for a purpose. He designed you for this time. You know, He gave you what He wanted. He gave you skills and abilities, the things that He wanted you to have. He gave you for a purpose and for a calling. Paul says it this way in Ephesians 2, 10th verse. For we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus unto good works, which God hath before ordained that we should walk in them. You think about that, that word workmanship, it kind of has to do with like fabric in the Greek, or the, I think it's the Greek word. You know, and it's this woven fabric. You know, God created you. He wove you. He made you. And he made you for a purpose. In other places, in other translations, it says, for we are his excellence. We are created by him for a purpose. He ordained it ahead of time. So I have these things that need to be done. I sent my son for salvation. I sent him for good works. There are plenty of good works out there that we need to be thinking about, that we need to be engaged in, because he created us for them. You know, so how did these people who ended up doing these great things, how did they get there? How did they get to accomplish so much? You know, they didn't start off in greatness. They didn't start off as these great orators or these great warriors. You know, they started off pretty small. When you look at Alma in the 12th chapter, in the 14th verse, and this is where the sons of Alma have decided, hey, we're going to go out and we're going to serve. And it came to pass that they journeyed many days in the wilderness, and they fasted much and prayed much that the Lord would grant to them a portion of his spirit to go with them and abide with them, that they might be an instrument in the hands of God to bring, if it were possible, their brethren, the Lamanites, to the knowledge of the truth. You know, they recognized something. There was a gap. There was something missing. Their brother Lamanites were lost, and they recognized it. They saw a need. You know, there was a need over there. Those people are lost. They're destined to be damned to hell. And they experienced what that was like in that short time. They said, I can't look on that and allow that. I can't sit here. There's a need. I don't want them to suffer that. I can see the need. I feel the call. So we're going to go. We're going to answer the call. We're going to see that this need needs filling, and we're going to go fill this need to the best that we can. They didn't feel like they were up to the task. They prayed about it. Like, God, help us. I see the need, but I'm not equipped to handle it. I don't even know if it's possible, because these people hate us. They kill us. They imprison us. They enslave us. I don't even know if it's possible. And God responds to them. It came to pass that the Lord did visit them with his spirit. And he said to them, be comforted. And they were comforted. And the Lord said to them also, go forth among the Lamanites, thy brethren, and establish my word. Yet ye shall be patient in long-suffering and afflictions, that ye may show forth good examples unto them in me. And I will make an instrument of thee in my hands unto the salvation of many souls. He says, I'm going to help you out, but you got to be patient. You know, it's not going to be easy. You're not going to just walk in and convert souls. You know, you're going to have to be patient. They're going to do wrong. They're going to hurt you. You're going to suffer. It's not going to be pleasant. This calling that I have for you. But you know what? It's going to show something. It's going to bring about a work. And so they asked. They saw the need and they filled it. That's one thing that we need. We just need to see, where's the need? If you look around, you'll find it. You don't have to be great. You don't have to be, you know, the lead. You don't have to be someone that is absolutely awesome at what they do. You just have to see a need. It's to God, help me. There's a need there. I think I can fill that, God. Can you help me fill that? So you just need to recognize first, where's the need at? Look in David. How did he get there? How did he get to be this king, this warrior, this one who was able to go and face giants and face down armies? And Saul asks him this. Look at 1 Samuel in 17th chapter. And David responds. And David said to Saul, Let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with the Philistines. And Saul said unto David, thou art not able to go against this Philistine and fight him. But thou art but a youth, and he is a man of war from his youth. And so Saul's like, you're not equipped to handle this. Now this guy has been studying combat his entire life. He's gone and he's champion. His size, his stature, his skills, and his abilities all his life have been led him to this point. You can't do this. You're not prepared. And David says unto Saul, thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear and took a lamb out of the flock. So David replies to this, I was a shepherd. Sounds like an odd qualification. Doesn't sound like one we'd want. Hey, we need to go fight this battle. We need to go fight this giant, this champion. Who you got? Well, we got some shepherds. Doesn't sound like the right qualification. So David describes it. And I went out after him, and I smote him and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and smote him and slew him. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God. David said, moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion, out of the paw of the bear, he would deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said unto him, unto David, go, and the Lord be with thee. So David said, you know what? I've been doing this. I received a calling from my father to go watch this flock. That was my task. Had nothing to do with the house of Israel. Had nothing to do with the salvation of his people. But he answered the call. I've been given a job. It's a small job. I got to protect this flock of sheep. That's my job. You know, if that sheep had been taken, if David had allowed that sheep to be taken, if he gave up, do you think anyone would have faulted him? Would anyone said, you should have gone after that bear. You should have gone after that lion. Would anyone have faulted him if he hadn't done it? Probably not. His father probably would have been understanding. Like, yeah, you lost one. It doesn't matter. We'll protect him. Bring him over here. They'll have more lambs. But David didn't see it that way. He was given a calling. And even though it wasn't this huge thing, he developed some good habits. He developed a sense of purpose and honor. I'm going to honor my father. He's asked me. He's called upon me to do this, and it's my responsibility. So he made a habit of service. He made a habit of answering the call. He made a habit of going to his God. In his small little place, his small little pasture where he took care of these sheep. And so he knew from this practice, he knew from taking care of those small things, God was watching over him. God was with him. God answered him. And so to him, this was just another predator and needed to be chased off. Because he knew that God would watch over him. It didn't matter what the danger was, God was watching over him. Because God saw that he had taken his calling seriously. In 1 Samuel 18:14, we find this one little scripture. And David behaved himself wisely in all his ways, and the Lord was with him. So it doesn't say in some of his ways or in the big ways. It was all his ways. In the little things, in the big things, David behaved wisely. He used the Lord's wisdom. And it didn't matter. He had this character about him that God could see. He looked, and when Samuel was looking at this ruddy, dirty little boy, God looked in the heart. This is someone. He's made the commitment. He will answer the call. I can see it in his heart. Because he conducts himself in the small things and in the big things. He's ready for it. I have this phrase that I use for my guys that I train in my SWAT team. And I tell them when they first come to me, if you're too big for the small things, then you are too small for the big things. If you're not willing to do the little stuff that takes care of us, then you're too small for the big stuff that when we need. If you're not willing to take out the trash, if you're not willing to clean up the truck, if you're not willing to do the thing, grab the water and the ice, you're too big for that. If that's beneath you, then I don't want you because I can't rely on you. I need you to be wise. I need you to behave a certain way all the time, no matter what the task is. And that's what God saw in David. The small things he was willing to take care of. It's what he saw in Ammon and the sons of Mosiah. They were willing to take care of a need. I recognize it. And I'm going to go and I'm going to take care of it. You know, it didn't always work out well. You know, David, he did what was right. He went and defended Israel, and Saul chased after him, tried to kill him, became jealous and angry. Sons of Mosiah were imprisoned and beaten. Yeah, but there was a purpose. There was a calling that needed answering. There was a gap that needed filling. And it doesn't have to be the big things. God just looks differently upon us. Mark in the 12th chapter in the 41st verse. And Jesus sat over against the treasury and beheld how the people cast money into the treasury. And many that were rich cast in much. And there came in a certain poor widow, she threw in two mites, which make a farthing. And he called unto him his disciples, and saith unto them, Verily, I say unto you, this poor widow hath cast in more than all they which have cast in the treasury. For all they did cast in of their abundance, but she of her want did cast in all that she had, even all her living. She gave everything. And she gave more, even though it was physically less, she had given more. God looks at us. How are we doing with the small things? When no one's looking, when no one's going to know, how do we handle ourselves? When there's no victim, when no one's going to suffer, are we wise? Do we conduct ourselves the way we should? When no one sees, when no one's going to suffer, God sees. Are we taking care of those little things? Because when we take care of those little things, we put in more. Yesterday we had a memorial for our brother Kenny, and also a memorial for Brother Smith Brickhouse. When you look at those two, and they're quite different. And we had an apostle of the church. My wife was talking about him in Sunday school. He did all these things. He got the youth camp running. He went over the ocean to preach the gospel. He reached far and wide. And he did wonderful things for the Lord. And look at Kenny. His place was here. He didn't go far. He didn't go wide. But now they are both before the same God. Because they gave. They saw their need. They answered the call. And it's not about how much we put in, it's like, how are we giving it? Are we giving everything? Are we giving all that we can? Do we recognize the need? Do we pay attention to the small things? You know, we all start out small. And that's okay. I didn't start off as an instructor teaching SWAT teams. I didn't start off teaching people how to be instructors, a master instructor title. I didn't start off there. I started off as a beat cop. You know, there was the small things that I had to pay attention to. I was working one night in a small, sleepy little beat. Not much goes on. And I got a call of an incident where someone had shot off a gun. So I responded over there, and the woman said, this man came by and he shot at my dog. I look over there in the street, there's this car sitting in the street. And she said he took off walking and he went that way. So I went and track him down. And I find this guy. And I grab a hold of him. And I start to talk to him. I see something's not quite right with this guy. I don't know what's happening. So I call the fire department out there, and he had a little small little pistol on him, so I took his pistol. And I was trying to talk. He couldn't answer my questions. He couldn't engage with me. And, like, something's strange with this guy. So we get the fire department there, and it turns out he was having a diabetic attack there. His blood sugar had tanked, so he couldn't speak. So they get those little tubes of glucose, and they give him those little tubes of glucose, and he snaps right back. And then he begins to describe to me what happened. You know, his car broke down, and he hit a curb. He was driving when his blood sugar was tanking, bounced off a curb, popped his tires, pulled over there, and in his mind, he was thinking, I gotta fix this. I live not too far away, so, well, in the meantime, this dog comes around the corner and starts barking at him, and he thinks it's a threat, so he shoots at it, misses, doesn't hit it. And the dog runs away, and then he's like, well, I still got to fix my car. So he wanders off. So, but the woman there, she was really, really, really upset that this had happened. And she said, I want him charged with, you know, this crime. I want him prosecuted. I want a pound of flesh. I'm like, well, I'll have to look into it, see if there's anything. So I looked at all the laws, and I found, you know, hey, you can defend yourself against an animal if you perceive it's attacking. So I said, there's nothing I can do for you. So she was really upset by this. So she calls, starts complaining, and then this lieutenant comes and he says, hey, we need to make her go away. She's just going to be a problem. So just charge this guy. Now I got a dilemma. I have a superior officer telling me, hey, you got to do something. But it's not right. And so And then he left. And I was like, so I called my sergeant. I was like, hey, I was told to do this, but I can't do it. And he's like, well, you don't have to. Just write up your report. I was like, all right. So I write up my report. And then, of course, that woman goes and pulls the report, finds out I didn't charge this guy. So she gets upset. She makes complaints. And this lieutenant comes back and goes, I told you to do this. Why didn't you do it? It's like, well, I can't, sir. It doesn't meet the code. It's like, that doesn't matter. They're going to, you submit it to the county attorney. They'll turn it down. I'm like, but I can't do that. So you're going to do that. I'm like, okay. So I wrote up my report. I said, here's what the crimes I was told to charge him with, and here's why they don't fit. Per this lieutenant, I was told. And I submitted my report. And I got a rejection from the county attorney. I had it for a long time. I used to have it hanging up in my locker. I was proud of this rejection. Usually you're not proud of those things. Usually you get rejected by the county attorney, you're upset. But I was happy I got rejected by this one. And he got the report. He's like, why did you write it that way? I was like, because it was the truth. I can't compromise myself. He goes, well, they wouldn't have done it anyway. I'm like, that's not the point. It's something small. No one would have suffered. No one would have done it. You know what? But it mattered. I couldn't do it. It was wrong. Just to make this woman happy so she would go away. And so that her ire could be placed on someone else because it was easier to deal with. And it probably right. He probably would have turned out that way. No one would have been hurt. But you know what? It's not who I am. I can't do that. You know what? It cost me for a long time. I wanted to go do things. I wanted to be an instructor. You know, I got turned down and turned down and turned down. Every time a course came up, I'd put in for it. Nope, you can't go. Like David running away from Saul. And he asked the question, why did this happen? I was doing the right thing. Why is he chasing me down? But you know, God created us for a purpose. And we go through hard things as part of his plan. Because in his eyes, no matter how big or how small something may be, it's all equal in his glory. All those people that went ahead of me, that got ahead of me, you know, none of them are there today. All those people that got instructorships that they sent instead of me, none of them, they're all gone. Every single one of them, they're gone. All those people they chose, you know, that paved the way. And this lieutenant was told to retire when it came to be his time. We don't want you anymore. You're done. You know, I saw him the other day, and he was working. He's not very good with money. He'd squandered all his money in his retirement. He had to take a job. Now he's working for a place called Public Works, trimming trees. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but, you know, how far he fell. And here I am. Success. A sought-after instructor. Not because I'm that great. I paid attention to the small things. But now thus saith the Lord, that created thee, O Jacob, and he that formed thee, O Israel, fear not, for I have redeemed thee. I have called thee by name, thou art mine. And we have this God who created us, and he knows each and every one of you. He created you for a purpose. You know, when you read in the readings of John, he says, you know, he describes himself as the disciple that Jesus loved. And you think for a minute, you know, that's kind of cocky. When you step back and look at it, you know, it's true. Jesus loves you. You are the disciple that Christ loves. And John knew it. He calls us. You are his, created for him, for a purpose. So no matter how big, how small it may seem, it matters. Because it's a part of God's plan. I thank you for your time.